This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Wednesday, May 5th. I'm Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a nearly 100-year-old property on Boulder's University Hill is set to become an apartment building that many fear will be occupied by CU students and change the neighborhood character. Roz Brown will have the details. We'll have a community encounter with a man you may have seen if you've passed the corner of 38th and Arapaho in Boulder in the past year. Rosana Longo has that interview. Then two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You with Chris Moore and Naturally with Brigitte Mars. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the latest Jim Hightower commentary just after the BBC headlines. And then it's a public affair. We'll revisit the Unhoused podcast, a look at housing challenges in Boulder, produced in partnership with Boulder Weekly. The podcast series has won a first place Top of the Rockies Award in the Solutions Journalism category from the Colorado chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. We'll hear two chapters of that series. But first, a look at headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
Last night, public hearings continued over the renewal of a permit for the Suncor Energy oil refinery north of Denver in Commerce City. Many of those testifying demanded closure of the facility and urged health officials not to renew the refinery's outdated permits that allow air pollution. The hearings are being held by the Colorado Air Quality Control Commission, which will decide whether to renew Suncor's permit or let it keep operating under outdated ones. A coalition of neighborhood groups and activists are targeting the 89-year-old refinery. The facility has regularly polluted at levels above the limits set in its permits. This year, between March 27th and April 22nd, the refinery broke limits 15 times, according to the Denver Post. At the hearings, residents said they've lost confidence in the state government's ability to control air pollution. They cited whistleblowers' revelations that state managers ordered employees not to measure pollution at some sites. Commerce City Mayor Ben Huseman said it's very troubling to have a facility that has a permit operating with so many exceedances. His city is exploring whether to sue Suncor. Others who testified expressed a desire to shift off of fossil fuels faster. The U.S. Immigration Detention Facility in Aurora experienced its largest outbreak of COVID-19 after almost 100 infected people were moved there last month from the southern border. The positive cases occurred among a group of more than 200 who were transferred. The Denver Post reports that the coronavirus testing has been compromised at border facilities by the sheer number of people coming into the country. Both Democratic U.S. Representative Jason Crow of Aurora and Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman are calling on the Biden administration to address the issue. Kaufman called the episode incredibly irresponsible, adding that there are no circumstances under which detainees who test positive should be brought to the facility. He said it endangers the community at large and puts the lives of all the detainees unnecessarily at risk. A spokesperson for ICE said she did not know exactly where on the border the migrants came from or why they were sent. She was unable to say whether they had been tested by border officials before being transferred. Once in the Aurora facility, the detainees were tested and isolated if positive. Boulder County Public Health reported one new coronavirus death on Tuesday. A spokesperson said that the person who died was in their 70s and was not a resident of a long-term care facility. There were 40 new positive cases in the county yesterday. Statewide, the seven-day positivity rate decreased to under 5.7%, according to the Colorado Health Department, and almost 2 million people have been fully vaccinated. The Denver Police Department has disciplined two officers for their conduct during racial justice protests in the city last May. Both will lose more than a week's pay for using chemical weapons on people who did not pose a threat. The Denver Post reports the two are the first officers to be disciplined for using excessive force. However, they may not be the last. Officer Derek Streeter will serve a 10-day suspension without pay for firing pepper balls on three occasions at people who did not pose a threat. Officer Diego Archuleta will serve a 6-day unpaid suspension for using pepper spray on a woman sitting in her car who also did not pose a threat. Another officer was fired in June for posting a photo on social media during the protests of himself wearing riot gear captioned, "Let's start a riot." According to Police Chief Paul Pazin, internal affairs investigations are ongoing into misconduct during the protests, but the department did not say how many are still open. Colorado lawmakers are considering a bill that would give police and sheriff's deputies more tools to identify and respond to people with Alzheimer's and dementia. House Bill 1122 also aims to boost training for law enforcement about how to interact with people with disabilities. The Colorado Sun reports that lawmakers were already working on a measure to increase training about how officers interact with people with disabilities, but the bill was broadened after the arrest of Karen Garner in Loveland. Garner is a 73-year-old woman who has dementia. Officers forcibly arrested her after she was accused of attempted shoplifting. The bill, which has bipartisan support, would create a 12-member commission to recommend a disability interaction curriculum to the Colorado Peace Officer Standards and Training Board. Also at the Capitol, Governor Jared Polis and lawmakers announced a transportation bill that would raise close to $4 billion from new fees to fund fixing up roads. The Colorado Sun reports the bill would impose new fees on gas and diesel fuel purchases and also add additional costs to deliveries, rideshare trips, and electric vehicle registrations. The measure has bipartisan support. Senate Majority Leader Steve Fenberg, a Democrat from Boulder, said that for the first time they are introducing a bill that isn't just a Band-Aid, but a framework to future-proof transportation. Boulder Mayor Sam Weaver attended the announcement of the bill at the Capitol yesterday. Today's weather will see partly sunny skies with highs in the low 60s and a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly this afternoon. The overnight low will be about 40, and tomorrow, sunny skies with a high of about 74. Right now, it's 48 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Redevelopment of the historic Marpa House on Boulder's University Hill is moving forward. KGNU's Roz Brown says Boulder City Council last night failed to overturn earlier approval of the project and will instead impose new conditions it hopes will satisfy neighborhood concerns.
The 98-year-old and newly landmarked Marpa House was originally a fraternity and more recently served as communal housing for Boulder's Buddhist community. It will soon become 16 three-bedroom apartments housing 48 people, and given its location, they will most likely be CU students.
We love the neighborhood. We love our neighbors.
That's Jim Scarborough, who told council during a virtual public hearing that he and his wife have lived a block and a half from Marpa House for 35 years.
And we are afraid that if this project is approved, that it's going to deal a severe blow to the neighborhood as it's traditionally existed.
Hope Michelson also lives nearby and expressed similar concerns, even though she's a CU professor who said she loves interacting with students.
That said, I am acutely aware that our students are still in the process of maturing, and many of them do not have enough maturity to act even in their own best interests, let alone the interests of or sensitivity to their neighbors or the broader community.
But Kathy Young argued neighbors should be glad the developer wants to redevelop the rundown property.
I've followed this issue very closely, and from what I can see, the opposition to 891 House is coming from a very wealthy, entitled neighborhood who likes to preach about diversity and equality and inclusion, but they complain when this project might interfere with their competing rental properties or the idea that students may be their neighbors, which I find to be blatant hypocrisy.
The property is owned by a group of investors led by developer John Kirkland and would be the fifth property on the hill operated by that development team. The group has already agreed to redevelopment conditions that include limiting parking, imposing quiet hours, and adopting a good neighbor agreement with surrounding property owners. But Councilman Mark Wallach suggested a good neighbor agreement might be wishful thinking.
For a dose of reality, I think that the conditions of the good neighbor agreement will be both unenforced and unenforceable. I don't know anybody who can seriously believe that college students are going to turn off amplified music before 10 and 11 o'clock. I don't know what in the long history of the behaviors of college students would make anyone think that. And as always, this complaint-based system is going to expose neighbors to retaliation that they are currently experiencing when they make complaints, and I think will result in little enforcement. And somebody earlier made the claim that the city could step in and enforce this agreement if necessary. I think that argument is specious. We have statutes on the books relating to noise, trash, and other behaviors on the Hill, which are barely enforced at all. And one visit to the Hill will tell you that.
Councilmember Mirabai Nagel echoed Wallach's concerns, saying she could not support the redevelopment.
When this number of neighbors that are actual property owners, which is for me who I'm looking to support because they have a massive investment in this neighborhood, that's a really scary thing. And when you're talking about the values that exist in Boulder, to have that in the balance be affected is a major deal. And so I think that there are projects that have happened in Boulder that have gotten sign off by neighbors, and there's been great neighborhood agreements. When we've had 2 years of working on this in the neighbors this upset, to me it sounds like there's some major problems.
Last night's project review by City Council followed an earlier unanimous approval from the Planning Board. And even before Council agreed to take a second look, opponents were warned that Council could only tweak conditions to make it more acceptable. Mayor Sam Weaver.
It's very likely that based on the reconfiguration of the units that it's going to be appealing to students. And so I think it is fairly clear that there'll be lots of students who are attracted to the layout and the configuration. And if we look at the other properties that this company is part of, it's clear that they are intended for students. And if there's a certain threshold of student occupancy, it's going to be much, much less attractive to families. So I think that's something to just be honest about.
Finally, Councilman Aaron Brockett reminded those who don't want to see Marpa House redeveloped that in Boulder, housing is the name of the game.
I do want to remind folks that we did do a landmarking of this property not that long ago. I think not at the owner's request, right? We imposed kind of limitations on the property just to preserve it in its current form. So getting something that would renovate it and improve it while staying landmark and preserving its historical character would be great. We do need housing in this town, and students need housing as well as older folks. I hear people's concerns, and I know that on average, younger people may tend to be a little louder than older people, but people of all ages need housing.
Boulder City Council is expected to take a final vote on conditions imposed for redevelopment of the Marpa House on May 18th. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
If you've passed by the intersection of 38th and Arapaho during a weekday in the last year, chances are you've seen Danny Mann there holding a sign. In our most recent edition of Community Encounters, reporter Rosana Longo went by to see why he's out there and what keeps him coming back.
Yeah, my name is Danny Mann. I've been doing this for almost a year now. June will be a year since George Floyd was murdered. And I was starting to go to rallies and marches here in Boulder and in Denver, and then they calmed down and I realized that I needed to do something. So I decided to come out here on 38th and Arapaho and hold up a sign. For me, this is like doing penance for my ignorance for most of my adult life. I'm 72 years old, and I've spent most of it really not knowing the true history of what's gone down in America, especially with black Americans. I feel like that hate is something that's taught and becomes habitual and systemic, and it's all based on fear, which obscures all of our goodness.
I want to ask you, you know, about these things that you are putting together. You're putting together racism and gun violence. Can you speak about that, the connection between racism and gun violence?
Well, for most of this time that I've been out here, I just had Black Lives Matter on the sign. And after the tragedy that took place a few weeks ago in Boulder, where 10 people were tragically murdered by a gunman who had no business owning a gun. And as far as the reports said, he had mental problems, and if there was effective background searches for people, that he would have never been able to buy a gun. Also, most of the deaths that have taken place from police and mass murders are with guns, and they're with guns that shouldn't be in the hands of civilians. They're made for military use, and these policies have to change. So I think it's connected. I certainly wanted the gun control part of the sign because of what took place right here in Boulder, and that takes place constantly throughout the year all over the nation.
As I have been standing here with you in the corner of 38 and Arapaho, I have also noticed that there's people that, you know, connect with you here in the street. Maybe people that already have seen you many times. You're saying hi to people. People are interacting with you.
Yeah, people honk and they throw peace signs and fists in the air. That basically signifies victory, not aggression. And it's very interesting. I mean, I get negative reactions as well. And at first, that really stung me. I've actually had people pull over and tell me to throw myself in front of the cars that are passing by because they're upset with the sign that I hold. But I'm not out here just for people who agree with me. I'm out here for everybody. And the negativity and the positive reactions are welcome. The important thing is that people keep seeing and remembering what's taking place in our communities all around the United States.
I have been standing here at the corner of 38 and Arapaho with Danny Mann holding a sign that says Gun Control, Black Lives Matter. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo.
Now, our regular Wednesday morning feature, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Attorney General Merrick Garland is telling lawmakers that the Justice Department needs more money for Biden administration to combat domestic extremism, racial inequality, environmental degradation, and gender violence. Mr. Garland just appeared before the House Appropriations Subcommittee that oversees the Justice Department to discuss his $35.2 billion budget request for the fiscal year that begins in October. That's an 11% increase from the previous year. The budget request reflects a commitment to ensure, quote, the civil rights and the civil liberties of Americans. Garland will prioritize attempts to fight domestic terrorism and protect civil rights work over the efforts to fight street crime and gangs that marked the Trump-era Justice Department. The budget request also includes an additional $101 million to address the rising threat of domestic terrorism, including $45 million for the FBI and $40 million that the federal prosecutors can use to manage their increasing domestic terrorism caseloads. It also includes $209 million for the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division and similar programs, a roughly 16% increase from the previous year for protecting voting rights and prosecuting hate crimes. The department's civil rights work, quote, is critical to protecting the American dream, Mr. Garland said. Garland also requested $1 billion for Justice Department programs to enforce the Violence Against Women Act. That's about double the 2021 level. Garland wants money to fund services for transgender survivors of domestic abuse, support women at Black colleges and Hispanic and tribal entities, provide funding for domestic violence hotlines, cash assistance programs, medical services, and emergency shelters. It would also help address the nation's backlog of unprocessed rape kits and fund new training programs for law enforcement officers and prosecutors dedicated to investigating gender-based violence. The Justice Department also wants $1.2 billion, $304 million more than the previous year, to support community-oriented policing and programs that address systemic inequalities in policing. Garland also called for an additional $232 million to combat gun violence, to fund federal law enforcement resources, grants for community violence intervention programs, improved background checks, and more comprehensive red flag laws. Garland is asking for a 21% increase in funding to immigration courts to support 100 new immigration judges and the technology needed to reduce the case backlog there. If you have thoughts on Attorney General Merrick Garland's budget priorities for the U.S. Justice Department, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
And tell them in our struggle we were not the only ones. Make them hear you.
Now let's join Brigitte Mars for advice about holistic living on this week's Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. Today I'd like to talk about what if someone in your realm has a stroke? We often know how serious that is, and one should certainly get immediate medical attention, but how do we know if that is even going on? So some signs to look for are a sudden headache, paralysis or numbness on either or both sides. There could be difficulty in breathing or speaking or swallowing, seeing, feeling dizzy, loss of bladder or bowel control, confusion, and loss of consciousness. These things are certainly serious and warrant the wonderful realm of what we have so excellent of modern medicine. But while you wait for medical attention or while you're deciding, place the person in the recovery position, or if they're conscious, help them lie down with the head slightly higher than the feet. Loosen any clothing around the neck, chest, and waist. Keep the victim cool to minimize any damage, fanning or cool compresses to the wrists, neck, and pelvic area. It's best not to give food or drink. However, cayenne pepper tincture might be a good thing to have, and I have not had experience with offering that for that reason, but it's certainly good for any type of blockage in the circulatory system. If you know CPR, you know all the more reason to take a CPR class. The red chakra is all about survival. If someone is recovering from a stroke, we certainly want to help the brain to repair itself. Consider something like lion's mane mushroom, which can be eaten as a vegetable. It's really good for regeneration of neural network and kind of looks like that too. Herbs such as ginkgo and gotu kola, and the antioxidant lipoic acid, essential fatty acids, young coconut meat, fish oils, or it could be an algae substitute. And black foods are really good for nourishing the kidneys and the brain. So think of chia seeds as a superfood. We all should be buying bags of that and keeping it in our freezer, but you have to soak it first before you eat it. Those are a few ideas for one of the many things on our planet that we get to deal with. Be prepared for anything, as they say. Many blessings. This is Brigitte Mars. Thanks for joining me on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine.